From the heart of Europe to the world, this is RTI.
Welcome to Postcard from Pop Red, boys and girls. On a very difficult week for us three lunatics to talk to you, but we'll do our very best. We are going to bring a lot of the breaking news to you this week, so stay tuned for that. Hi, I'm Eric Wiltshire at the base of the beautiful Tatry Mountains. We've got a glorious sunny day here, and it makes you wonder how people in other parts of the world are surviving and how lucky we are. Anyway, I'm in the town of Pop Red in the east of Slovakia, the beautiful east of Slovakia, and there's still snow on the mountains, by the way. What we're not going to name it the usual fashion, because I think he's just as lucky to live where he is after today's events. In Great Britain, it is none other than Lee Banks.
How would you do? Yeah, no, I think you're right. I'm sitting here the same as you, in the sun, thinking it's lovely.
And yes.
It's such a tragic, sad day that...
is rather. And in Gay Paris, in Les France, it is Mark Gander.
Yes, well, hello there, and goodness, I wish I lived in England, I have to say. Oh, goodness, I'd rather live in Baghdad, actually.
No, I don't think you would. Anyway, we'll leave the messages out, because we've got so much to get through this week, boys and girls, and we've got a lot of sad news to start off with. First of all, our commiserations do go to everybody over in the Asia-Pacific region, specifically Japan, and specifically our colleagues who will be going to in a second at NHK Tokyo, who had the dramatic job of feeding the news out to absolutely everybody. We will be hearing from the minister who's in charge of all that sort of area over in Tokyo in a couple of seconds' time. Mark, you've been looking at the news. What's the latest update?
Well, the latest is that they're just saying that it's causing huge amount of damage. The death toll is rising, of course. I mean, they're announcing things like sort of 60 dead so far, but you know, I mean, I'm afraid that it's the kind of thing that in a couple of days they're going to be talking in the many thousands. I'm quite sure.
I think so.
It's devastating. You've got to realize that I think Japan is a country of what, 130,000-140,000 people. Something like 90% of the people live on the coast. I don't know how many of them live on that coast, but I tell you, an awful lot.
Okay, Lee, what have you been following with it?
Just seeing how it's been going. It's absolutely terrible, isn't it? And the problem is, it was such a high magnitude of a quake that the tsunami has now... There are so many countries now facing similar possibility of similar devastation.
We're hoping we're going to bring you a list of that in a second, boys and girls.
Yeah.
We were looking at it this morning, and being one that can watch television around most parts of the world from home, I quickly went over to NHK Tokyo, who I had the honour and privilege of working for a while, and to see this actually came in, I think it was summed up beautifully by my partner Martina, and she just said, poor people, and that kind of sums it all up. Anyway, boys and girls, we're going to cross over to our colleagues at NHK in Tokyo. We'll get a list of hopefully a list of all the countries as well, and we'll be back in a couple of seconds' time.
This is RTI, Radio Tatras International.
For those of you who are just tuning in to NHK World, a major earthquake hit Japan Friday afternoon. Japan's meteorological agency says the quake measured 8.8. The agency has issued a tsunami warning for Japan's Pacific coast. Those tsunami obviously has already hit extensive areas throughout northern Japan. It's one of the largest ever in Japan's history.
8.8 is the
largest. Let me revise that. It's 8.8, magnitude 8.8 is the largest ever recorded in Japan. One of the biggest earthquakes, the biggest earthquake ever to hit the country. Japan's meteorological agency is getting set to talk to us, or has talked to us earlier on. Japan's meteorological agency has talked to us early on, and here's what they had to say. Meteorological agency's Hirofumi Yokoyama speaking to us earlier on, saying that he's issuing a large earthquake or a large tsunami warning not to return to coastal areas. Stay in higher grounds, and he says this warning is to be in place. He also says that aftershocks could be felt for up to as long as an entire month. The Pacific Tsunami Warning Center has extended the area where tsunami waves may strike. It's no longer just Japan that may be hit by tsunami waves. Its warning now includes Indonesia, Hawaii, Australia, New Zealand, and the South American Pacific coast, including Mexico, Chile, and Peru. Earlier, the center issued a warning for Russia, Marcus Island, the Northern Marianas, Guam, Wake Island, and Taiwan. First, tsunamis are not necessarily the largest. Some cases, the sea suddenly draws back. Tsunamis can hit the coast at an extreme rapid pace, as we've experienced here in northern Japan. Earlier this week, I talked to an expert on a tsunami, and he said the number one thing is do not climb into your car. Go by foot to higher ground. So please, if you are listening to this program, and if you are in the countries that I have just mentioned, please move to higher ground.
RTI.
Welcome back, boys and girls. Thank you to NHK Tokyo for the update and the list of countries. I have to say, though, the what they were saying about the islands in there and the atolls, I think you've got some more on that, haven't you, Lee?
Well, it's very simply, a lot of them have actually, it's just coming through now, have actually escaped the attack of the tsunami. And but there is still a lot of danger about, because the wave that's is actually higher than most of the islands.
Yes.
It's just something we're just going to have to keep an eye on and pray for the people. It just is an absolutely terrible
And I think take the message from NHK, which is, you know, don't try and drive in your car through water. Get the heck out of it. Move away to high ground. And, you know, be sensible about your travel. I saw genuinely this morning when it actually took place, we watched cars trying to race. And I can understand the terror of people trying to do this, but trying to race the tsunami as it was coming up behind them. And they were not winning. They genuinely were not winning. And apologies for the noise in the background on that connection. That was the helicopter that they were using at the same time. So sorry for that. But, you know, you're not going to outrun one of these tsunami things.
Yeah, but that does beg the question, doesn't it? Like, you know, you've got to feel sorry for it. These people are desperate. They're trying to save their own lives, aren't they?
Absolutely.
And what would you do? It's the only escape you've got, isn't it?
I think if nobody's told you to get up and go quickly and walk away from your vehicle, you're going to do exactly what they did. But as the man said, if you are listening, take note of what he was saying and move on quickly, or speak to your more local emergency services and see what they say, which is probably the best thing to do. Moving across to North Africa now, it has been overtaken somewhat by the disasters in Japan, but still loads going on in Libya as well, and we have to say commiseration to so many people out there as well.
Of course you do. In fact, it's something new that didn't happen, never really happened before, is that in these sort of war situations, the people involved are actually turning on the press, which never used to happen. But the BBC team, as we know, was kidnapped and beaten up by Gaddafi forces. So they've released it back home. But there's a chap from The Guardian.
Yeah, but let's qualify that, Lee. The BBC team were from the Arabic service of the BBC. So I'm not defending what they did, but, you know, they are from the region. They do look similar. And I'm guessing, I could be wrong, that if you say I'm from the BBC, they expect you to speak with some kind of London accent.
I think you've been very kind to Mr. Gaddafi.
No, don't start me on
I did notice that apparently that one of the team, who apparently was a Palestinian, was singled out for especially bad treatment. And you're quite right. I mean, it must be really quite terrifying. And you really understand how courageous some of the journalists are to be in this area. Mm. But I think that it's not at all surprising. I think it comes with the territory now. And I think that probably any journalist who really thinks that he's going to, or she's going to be in that kind of area and not be in danger, then I think maybe they're being a bit naive. I think that's probably the new phase of journalism.
I think that's what you've got to do. You've got to go. You know, the only war zone I was ever in was in Northern Ireland. Mm. And, you know, I've been to a few disasters and things. But usually, in the past, the press when they had the press cards and the press on the side of the van or whatever, where we had an immunity which has now been taken away.
Not really. Well, I mean, don't forget, Gaddafi the fool has perpetually gone on about the Western press inciting people to do this, inciting people to do that. The Western something or other. You know, he's not looking at his own mirror. Because that's the problem.
No, yeah. But it's happened in other. It happened in Iraq and others. You know, it's just one of the dangers of the job now.
I think in Egypt just recently, didn't it? I mean, I think that there were some journalists who were beaten up. I mean, wasn't there
some BBC
an American
guys
journalist who was so badly assaulted? Was she raped? Yeah. She was sexually assaulted, and she eventually went back to the States.
Mm. Yeah, and the bloke, I can't remember his name off the BBC, who was shot in Iraq, died in Iraq.
Yeah,
but. Anyway, but what about this? I suppose I'm not being incendiary when I say this, but our government has now turned round and said that Gaddafi has chemical weapons.
And that why is am I not out. Surprised?
Well, yeah, but what appalls me about it, he may well have them. But it's the same tactics as we used with Saddam. It's just we are probably making things up like we made up the weapons of mass destruction so that we can go in there full-blown after the meeting which is taking place today as we speak.
I think that this time it's got to be unilateral. I can't see it going any other way. But the fact is that there's where this is slightly different to Iraq... And it's marginally different. I think the Libyan people have got a better understanding, better knowledge and better access, even when people try and turn it off, to the internet, which means they've got citizen journalism on their side more than the previous Iraq regime, where they couldn't get anything out. So I think that Gaddafi's onto a bit of a loser here, because the people that are able to disperse the news to the outside world are actually cleverer than him and his sons, because if they were that smart, they'd, you know, get round it. But they're not that smart. They're actually quite stupid and also dangerous, because they think, I can just switch a wire off and everything goes away. It doesn't. And the young guys actually know what to do with this stuff. So they're going to win anyway. And as it goes, you've got different organisations, for example, France, Mark, as well, who are speaking to the opposition parties who have set up a sort of quasi-government as a transitional thing. So France and England are both talking to the opposition, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, I think that's one important thing, and I think that's a big difference between that, for instance, in Iraq, because in Iraq there was no opposition to talk to at all, and really there was no game plan, and there was sort of, you know, they really hadn't sort of designed what the end of it was going to be.
So sure.
That's one of the reasons why it was a mess. At least it seems to me that it is possible maybe to intervene in Iraq, hopefully just to sort of try and stop this genocide, and then at the end of the day to move away and leave it in the hands of, you know, a rebel group which is already there and prepared to be the government. And I think that that's maybe important.
And seems to have popular support, it's got to be said.
Yeah. Seems to have popular support. And I'm sure actually whatever Gaddafi's doing in the west of Libya, I'm sure there will be loads of popular support when he finally goes.
Yeah, I'm sure it will. Anyway, let's move on, boys and girls, but just end by wishing everybody wherever you are in the world, if you have got those problems, our thoughts and prayers are with all of you, and we hope for peaceful times in front of you, that's for sure. Britain, should I was a good song here. Should I stay or should I go
should
now?
I go?
Oh, we all did it in. Oh, that's Trio, isn't it?
As opposed to Trio.
Trio instead of stereo. The story is not even the smell of fish and chips would be enough to lure expats back to Britain.
Well, that's really the reason I thought is I just think it's very interesting that we've got you, Eric, who is an expat and loves it. You have you, Mark, who is an expat and hates it. And you've got me, who's an ex-everything, like ex-husband, ex-journalist, ex-sex bomb, everything. Yeah. And I can't be an expat because I can't escape the country.
Well, why can't you escape? I mean, hasn't your tunnel reached there yet?
No,
which one is yours, Harry or Dick?
Yeah.
Excuse
Very
me.
Good. Very good. I'm impressed with that. If you don't know the answer, you'll have to write in and we'll tell you. I'll tell you what astounds me about this survey, which says, and Mark's going to be horrified at this, the most popular country for immigrants is France.
Yeah.
What?
France.
I would like to live in France.
Well,
I want to live in Slovakia.
Yeah, what I'd like to know about this. Okay, sorry, Eric, because I interrupted you, but I got things to do.
That's all right. I knew you'd go up the wall. France, followed by Spain, the US, Australia, Thailand, Cyprus, New Zealand, Canada, South Africa, and Portugal. So there's nothing in Slovakia. That's probably because it's only me out of this part of the world. But the bit I don't understand, and this is a really true story, almost a quarter missed fish and chips. And the same of British beer.
Exactly.
Now, I have to say that France is closer to England than good old Slovakia. Now, if I want fish and chips, I go to my local shop and I buy fish and chips. Alternatively, I can go to my local supermarket, of which there are the same in the UK, and I can buy a bag of frozen fish and chips that says fish and chips on it. Equally, I can buy a British pale ale in a bottle, which happens to translate it, it's called Mayor's beer. And I can
Mayor's?
Buy, yeah, mayor, as in the citizen mayor person.
Oh, right.
It's called Premator in Slovak.
I bet it's rubbish.
It's actually old-fashioned pale ale.
Right.
I like old-fashioned pale ale.
Yeah, it's so stereotypical. I mean, it's not mead, but next to mead, it's a typical British beer. So I don't understand why all these countries there... Can you buy all this stuff, Mark?
Well, no, it's very difficult. And I can tell you that France is completely protectionist. Their supermarket chain are run by a number of private families. They're very careful about doing anything non-French. It's just quite amazing. But I have to say that, you know, I'm very interested in this list of the most popular countries to emigrate to. And I think that really one needs to know more. And I think one needs to know what kind of people are emigrating.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can tell you that just in London alone, there's...
satisfy you, Mark.
Well, I think just in London alone, there's meant to be about 300,000 French people, and they're young French people with energy who are going out to get jobs and make money and to save up.
That's right,
and many of them want to stay there. The people, for instance, who go to France, generally speaking, they don't go to Paris, okay? And I mean, let me say that Paris is a poisonous place, and the French people think so as well, by and large. Even Parisians don't like each other very much. Mm-hmm. And the kind of Brits who go to France, generally speaking, tend to go further south, very much to the southwest, and tend to be much more middle-aged and older than that. And they tend to go because they think they're going to relive the good life, and they're rather curious about living sort of life in a sort of, you know, artisanal, if there's such a, it's certainly French more, you know, sort of cottage industry kind of way.
Mm.
And the other thing, of course, is that when they are out there, they immediately form their own expatriate communities, and there are comparatively few French expatriate communities, for instance, in London,
yeah.
who want to intermingle. But the Brits who go to France actually prefer to stay with the Brits. I have to say, I don't.
That's why, isn't it? Yeah, that's
and
why it is.
If I can just say one more thing here, that the smell of fish and chips apparently luring expatriates back to Britain. Well, you see, it's a bit like push email and pull email, and that's the kind of sort of pull theory, okay? But if you live in France long enough, believe me, there's another smell here which will push you out back to in Britain, and it's not very nice, and it's mucky, and I'm not going to talk about it.
the thing is, what we have to remember,
yeah.
you know, that intro that we've picked up on, the smell of fish and chips and beer, is actually just a journalistic trick to get into the story. Because, let's face it, what we eat over here isn't fish and chips. We eat kebabs.
And curry.
We do.
And curry. Yeah. And beer. We drink lager. And we don't drive British cars, and we don't watch English televisions, and we don't watch English programmes on the television.
No, you watch...
Britain is at...
You drive a lot of Slovak cars.
Yeah.
You have a lot of Slovak... excuse me, where are the French cars made?
We mean the Renaults and the Peugeots. There's heaps.
Where are they made?
I know where they're made.
They're made in France, aren't they?
No.
No.
Oh, are they?
Slovakia.
I'm very pleased to hear it.
Because, I mean, ironically, we've got a Renault and a Skoda, both of which are Slovak cars, which never were before, but they are now. Volkswagen are here, Renault, Citroën. Kia Motors is here. There's all sorts of companies here that manufacture. And equally, your television set will probably come from somewhere like Sony or one of its other branded like trademarks. And again, those television sets are from Slovakia. The screens are made in Poland.
So we might as well all move to Slovakia.
Well, it's quicker.
I'd like to do it. I tell you what, obviously.
You won't have to wait so long for
this.
Delivery.
Yeah.
I've been trying to move to Slovakia for 5 years now.
Have you really?
Why don't you? What stops you?
Basically, property commitments at the moment. Because if
he's making too much money out of it, Mark.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd like to say one more thing about Paris.
Yes.
Okay, and about immigrating from Paris. The Germans here were here for quite a long time, a few years ago. And believe me, when they finally left, they were pleased to leave, and there was no chance they'd ever come back again.
I just defend Paris?
What for?
Please.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you defend Paris, you'll be the only person who ever has.
No, actually, go on, Lee, you go first.
Paris is absolutely one of the most wonderfully charming, exciting, romantic, dramatic cities in the world. I love Barcelona, I love Madrid, I love Lagos in Portugal, but the one place I always want to come back to is Paris. What about that arts centre with all its innards on the outside?
Pathetic.
What about the woods of the Louvre? What about everything?
A Louvre? I washed me back with a Louvre.
It's just wonderful.
Yes, but those are just the museums. Those are just the museum pieces. We're talking about the life of the city. There's no life in Paris. It lacks energy. Believe me, it's dull. There's nothing new. There's been nothing new built in Paris for over 150
ding, ding, round
years.
Two.
What about walking down the Seine at midnight? What about
you swim down it? You mean?
Well, you have to be insane, don't you? The old ones are the best. Although I have to say, there is one good thing I found in Paris one time, Mark. It's true. You remember when there was mad cow disease in the UK?
Yeah.
And the stupid thing about bone marrow and T-bone steaks and all that. And at that time, I was going to work, do a job for TV5. And so I paddled into France. The nice taxi driver said, "Stop trying to practice your French. I can speak good enough English. Which restaurant do you want to go to? Blah, blah, blah." And I sat while everybody in England was moaning and groaning about the beef and the mad cow disease. And I had the biggest, beautiful T-bone steak with marrow bone inside of it and enjoyed every minute of it. Thank you, Paris.
And one warning for people to go into Paris, though. You've got to remember there is a distinct difference between the two French words, garçon and cochon.
Just a bit.
Yeah, and if not a lot.
Yeah. Well, you're ordering.
That depends on your viewpoint.
Well, you don't tell me you went and ordered a cochon, but in fact you wanted a garçon.
Yeah. moving along, as we're going to run out of time otherwise. If we were lambasting the UK and the way we've been talking a couple of minutes ago, how come is it then that the UK is the second most popular country, yet another survey?
I don't know, but this is a BBC World Service country rating poll survey. And it asked 29,000 people to rate the global influence of 16 major nations.
Mm-hmm.
And Britain came second. Germany came first, but Britain came second. Apparently, after all the stuff we've just said about Britain and expats not wanting to come back, apart from Mark, it's actually a desirable place to be. Yeah.
Well, that's because they see it as
about Britain.
It's a financial thing.
Well, not only that, I think it's very well rated. I think it's very well regarded, and I can tell you that all the French people I speak to say that yes, you know, London is just really such a sort of relaxed place where people are sort of far more liberal in their attitudes to each other. People really admire us, and even the French.
Yeah,
I think it's
because other people have more money than us; they can afford.
No, I'll tell you what. There is another one between France or Paris and London, very very similar. Can you imagine, Mark, the furore that would take place if... Well, I know there's one English-speaking radio station in Paris already, but if there was another one even suggested, the Parisians would go nuts, wouldn't they?
Well, there is actually an organisation called the Académie Française, which actually prevents the use of English words and English songs to a great extent on the radio, and does everything it can to make sure that not only English is not spoken, but even French local languages. Can you imagine that?
Absolutely.
France has something like 68 local languages, and they are actually have been made, if you like, unofficial, and they're not allowed to be taught or written in or anything.
Ridiculous.
And this is all controlled by the Académie Française, which apparently looks after the sacred identity of the France.
And, of course, what happened in London? France. Because there were so many Parisians in there, they were granted a licence for a radio station in French. I thank you very much. Shows you just the whole thing, really. No, I don't want everybody to fly to Slovakia. I like being here on my own. Every time Lee Banks is here, I pay the customs officers to get rid of him.
No, I just thought, under the circumstances, because the airport staff in Spain have decided to call travel chaos again for Easter and everything,
as
might
usual.
As well all fly out to Slovakia. It's a much nicer place anyway.
Well, that's true. Spain.
I'd really like to go there, actually, I have to say. It sounds great.
Are we painting a good picture of it, are we?
Yes.
Well, actually, the truth is, we're not overselling it. We're probably underselling it.
Is it cleaner than Paris?
Oh, undoubtedly.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Absolutely.
Is it friendlier than Paris?
It's a lot friendlier than Paris. Everything's friendly about Slovakia, isn't it?
I think
the police are friendly.
It's best summed up. Somebody asked me yesterday what would happen. And it was a person, I don't know how it came apart. But anyway, I was asked to answer some questions for a young man. And I said, well, if your girlfriend was walking home from a nightclub at night, from like London, Paris, whatever, what would you do? He said, well, I'd make sure she got in a cab. I said, well, here, the truth is, she could walk home on her own, and the worst thing a guy in a hoodie would say is, good evening. That's the truth. And I think the other really cultural shock that I had originally was, for example, if you see a young child running loosely in the UK, and I mean a toddler, Mark, you know, a kiddie of 2 years old, yeah?
Yeah.
If you went to grab that child to try and save it, being a grown-up citizen, you'd be accused of being a paedophile. Instantaneously. In Slovakia, it's your duty as a citizen, where mum's sort of running 10 metres behind because she's got all the bags and all the rest of it, and she's on her own, the little toddler's running towards the stairs. You're actually expected to grab the toddler and pick it up and give it back to mum. And they go, thank you.
Sure. That's the thing. It's a country which, on the surface, appears to, although it's a very go-ahead country, it has old-fashioned values, and that's part of the beauty of it.
Yeah, yeah.
There's something else it's got as well, do you know?
What's that?
You don't know this, Eric.
Go on.
It has the world's first Siamese tortoise. Siamese twin tortoise. It's called Magdalena. It has two heads and has two brains that work independently of each other. So it's a bit mixed up. But it is. Slovakia is the proud owner of the first world first Siamese tortoise.
So it walks sideways, is what you're telling me.
Well, I don't know. How does it get on? What if it falls out with its other head?
There must be a hell of a struggle going on inside that shell, mustn't there? I mean, really.
Well, that's it, yeah. And it's a good job they can't talk.
Otherwise one side will get an ASBO against the other.
Yeah. If you can still get such a thing, that's for sure.
Actually, I think they've just invented an animal ASBO, if you want to know. So one's been issued against dogs, so I think that you might be able to get one for a tortoise.
Coming up in part two of the programme, boys and girls, why cigarettes are the new pornography. Oh, really? There's a victory here. Barclaycard 0, postcard from Poprad 1, WON. We'll be looking at the moon and various other subjects as we get to part two of Postcard from Poprad. Thanks very much for your company in part one. If you've only just joined us, where the devil have you been? We've been slaving away over hot microphones for the last 30 minutes. And the other thing, just to remind you, very quickly, details are on our website from last week. The Prince's Trust Games Jam is coming up in just over a week's time. If you'd like to take part in that, all proceeds go to the Prince's Trust. And we have forgotten to say hi to the nice guys at Talk Radio X, Replay Radio, RTI, and, of course, those listening via Audio Boo. We'll be back for part two in Faster Than You Can Make a Milkshake.
RTI.